double. He's at driving the lane. Crosses up Van Vula. Okie doke move and lays it up for two. Lee with a nifty move there.
He could go all the way, and the freshman takes it to the house with no time on the clock. Are you kidding me? He takes it 60 yards. Welcome to Redbird Nation.
And the shoe. She gives it to Katie Broadway. Broadway taking it herself down the left side. No good. But she's going to get her own rebound. Kicks it out. Kansas Sykes for three.
Got it. It's good.
She got it. Kansas Sykes for three.
From local high school action to the birds and the pros, with live interviews, reporting, debate, and discussion, WZND's Red Zone brings you all the sports you can handle each week. The Red Zone starts now, only on 103.3 WZND, the pulse of Redbird Nation.
Welcome back, my friends, to the show that never ends. It's the Red Zone on 103.3 WZND. I'm Leo Stoddaher, your sports director here. I'm joined by my assistant sports director, Joey Dwyer, the commissioner of our office basketball league, and our producer, Joe Kennedy, and baseball, that's true, and Joe Kennedy, our producer, who has his own business card, so you know he's legit.
You know we're super legit. We're super legit here at the Red Zone.
Only the best here at WZND. And guys, it's been a big week for ISU sports. We had a lot going on. So why don't we start it off with the track and field team, because they had a record-setting weekend.
And I feel like we don't talk about track and field enough, or just in general, collegiate track and field isn't talked about enough because, you know, it's not basketball or football.
Yeah.
Not, it doesn't bring in the most money, but there's still a lot of great athletes. And ISU is blessed with some incredible athletes, one of those being Kamisha Smith, who jumped 5 feet and 11 and a half inches, almost 6 feet, and she broke a record at ISU that stood for 29 years.
And I don't... I was going to say, I don't know if you guys have ever been to a track meet, especially an indoor track meet, but it's a pretty cool thing. When you clinch first place in the high jump, you could set the bar to whatever mark you want and just kind of go for it then. And it's really cool, especially when somebody's going for a height like that. Like, there are times when, like, the entire track will just stop. Like, the races aren't going. Everybody just watches. Mm-hmm. I remember at my conference championship meet senior year, a guy was going for the meet record. And it was just the whole packed field house was just sitting there doing, you know, the synchronized clap building up to his jump. And it was just, you could hear a pin drop when he left the floor. And that was, I feel bad for Kamisha Smith. I'm glad she set the record because she's one of the best track and field athletes this school's ever seen. But I wish she could have broke it with that atmosphere, with fans in attendance. Because trust me, guys, when we can get back and have fans in attendance, we need to go to a track meet and just get to see, like, how the electric atmosphere that comes with indoor track and field.
Yeah, I feel like track and field, overall, it's definitely slept, especially with fans, it's been slept on. Like, my time going to those meets, you see that energy and you see that it's brought out almost every single match you're going to. In ISU, we have three out of the top athletes in track and field in the Missouri Valley Conference, Kamisha Smith and a couple of other people, and we've been pretty dominant, and we've had one Olympian too over the past 10 years, and maybe we'll be able to add more too.
Yeah, I mean, the way it's looking right now is Kamisha Smith was rumored in Olympic talk going into last summer. Obviously, the Olympics got postponed, and so was Jack Ancy. Smith would have been competing for Team USA and Ancy for Team Australia. And with the Olympics getting pushed back a year, it almost helps both them and the Redbirds because they now get to train for an extra year. They both would have graduated last season, but now they get to compete an extra year, hope to earn both teams a Missouri Valley title. And then for the Olympics, it just gives them that extra year to train under Coach Bovey and prepare for that goal. Now that they're 1 year more experienced and more seasoned, they could have maybe a more realistic shot of qualifying for the Olympics this summer.
And they... Oh, sorry, Joe, go ahead.
And if Koski and Kamisha Smith do get a chance to possibly qualify for the Olympics, it would be back-to-back Olympics that the Redbirds are represented in for track and field. So that not a lot of colleges across the entire country, even across the entire world, can say that.
And you wouldn't definitely think that from a school in the Midwest. For collegiate track and field, it's the California schools and the Florida schools that dominate, you know, the warm weather states. So for Illinois State to have built up such a solid program over the last decade or so, that really does speak a lot.
And especially as Kyle Brennan comes into the new AD role as well and brings some new ideas, I can only imagine track and field at ISU growing to be even more successful. And it's hard to be more successful than you already are. But throughout this indoor track season, the ISU has just absolutely dominated. And then they've got their last meet on Friday. or I guess tomorrow. Wow.
Yeah.
This week, man. They've got their last meet tomorrow before the Missouri Valley Championships and then the NCAA Championships, which I'm sure are going to see some, is going to see some Redbird representation. Yeah.
And definitely, and it's even weird, too, this semester that they've been having cross-country mixed into the fold, too. So these Redbird athletes are just going nuts this season on the track. Yeah,
yeah.
And we talked about with Rachel Hickey how she's been training for two sports at once, and she couldn't be more excited. You definitely see that excitement as now they're setting records and winning conference titles, you know, this early. That the excitement is definitely there.
And Kevin Koski... he fell just 1 second short of that record in the 5,000 meter. And then Logan Kelvin, that was like 2 weeks ago, but we haven't had a chance to talk about it. He got his own PR in weight throw with first time over 20 meters, and he's now first in the Missouri Valley Conference and also third in ISU history in that category. So that's another record that could possibly be broken this year or possibly even next year.
And so just needless to say, ISU track and field has a lot of awesome things going on, and I'm very excited. We're hoping to get somebody on here in the next couple weeks before they have their conference tournament and then the NCAA tournament. So that's going to be a great... that'll be a great interview if we can get it. That would be... I'd be so excited.
Absolutely. And maybe now you talk about a team that has a lot going for it. Should we switch to a Redbird team?
That was tough. That was a tough transition.
Yeah, we should have a lot of things going.
But they're currently playing Bradley, too.
I'm referring to the Illinois State men's basketball team. They're... Well, I guess they're coming off a good weekend where they split with Southern Illinois, and now they're facing a Bradley team that is going to look very different tonight.
Yeah.
Care to elaborate, Joseph?
Yeah, so they're going to be very different tonight because Jayshon Henry, he was cleared of... so there's some accusations put out by the Bradley team last week, but Jayshon Henry has been cleared, but Elijah Childs, Terry Nolan, and Dana Kingsby remain under investigation, and they've been suspended still from basketball activities. And I don't even think Jayshon Henry is... I don't know if he's playing tonight. I'm going to check the scores right now.
He actually is playing.
Active. Okay.
He has 2 points for Bradley. Bradley has a total of 2 points.
Okay.
3 minutes in. Illinois State has 11. So this could be the Redbirds' fourth conference win if this score keeps how it is right now.
And Joey, you were saying they were heavy underdogs. For pick six, we were looking at just different scores, and they were at 15%.
Birds were at 15% chance to win this game. And obviously, whoever makes the odds for ESPN.com did not realize that the Braves are missing three key players on their team right now.
And even when the two teams met, you know, back at the start of the season, like, ISU just outclassed Bradley and the whole
ends
of the court. Yeah, like, it was the Redbirds really played, I'd say, their most complete game of the season, and Bradley just really looked dysfunctional that game.
And all three of us were at that game, which is kind of something rare to say.
Yeah, because
you only get two media passes per, like, station, but Leo was there for TV, Joe and I were calling the game. So and that was the best the Redbirds have looked in the past 2 years.
And that's what's so troublesome about this team is they looked so good that night, like, but where has that effort been all season is what confuses me.
And we talked about it, too. I'm pretty sure on the Red Zone that week that we saw that excitement, even in the losses against Drake, too, and a couple other teams. Like, you see the excitement, but at the end of the day, they're still not a very great team in the conference right now. But I think they can easily beat Bradley tonight. They've done pretty well against Bradley, even the past couple of years, too.
And I think, and you, Joe, you're absolutely right. But as a whole, looking outside of just this Bradley game, it has been a tough, tough season for the Birds. Right now, they're 3-12 in conference, 6-15 overall, and it has just been absolutely brutal. And obviously, we've been talking about it all year. You have to take it with a grain of salt because this team is so young.
Mm-hmm.
But it's been tough to watch and to call these games as they just have gotten absolutely walloped.
But it is 11-2 right now for ISU, actually. So off to a good start here in the first half, 16 minutes left. And maybe they just can keep things going. But one thing I feel like they also got to work on is making sure that they keep their leads or trying to get back into games. Because I feel like once they're down by a lot, they're kind of not give up, but it's just really hard for them to crawl back because they shoot the ball so well, and when they don't shoot, it's just that ain't gonna work.
Definitely, that's something that's plagued them all season. And if you want live updates, our guy Jake Fogle is at the arena reporting, so you can
follow.
We'll get his Twitter handle out here at the end of the segment, and you can follow there for live updates because he's doing a great job there. But, guys, on last week's show when we were doing the Redbird recap, we talked about how excited we were for football season.
Oh, yeah.
That kickoff was supposed to be this weekend. But I guess we're going to have to wait another week because we got lots of ice at Missouri State, so there's no game this weekend.
What are they, like... Were they not clearing off the field the whole season like ISU was? Like, were they practicing inside
that's
the
what
whole time?
That's what I don't get. Like,
I just
were they
don't
not
get
practicing
it.
On the field?
Why aren't you preparing for this? Like,
because the reports were that it was like close to
a foot, right?
An inch of ice, like,
or, an inch.
Or like there was snow and then like an inch thick piece of ice, like covering the field, and that they couldn't get thaw the ice without damaging the field turf. But that's, like you said, how do you let that happen? Like, have they not been practicing on it for months?
Somebody in the office threw this out. It was either late yesterday or early today. Said there's actually no ice. They're just scared to play the Birds.
Yeah.
And that's what I'd like to believe, because the Birds do look scary this year.
And Missouri State did play three games, too, in the fall. You can't forget about that.
I'm really?
Sure they played Oklahoma and then Arkansas State, I believe, twice.
That's right.
In the fall. So they've had their chances to prepare. And ISU actually did get a chance to look over their film. But Coach Spack was saying in the press conference on Wednesday that even though they got to watch that film, they aren't able to – or a lot of Missouri State players have actually left, either transferred or even just graduated. So it's just going to be interesting to see how much of a difference that could possibly make with ISU having film of the current Missouri State team. And then ISU's team is almost just completely different from 14 months ago. Wow, it's been so long since they've played. And they're really young.
And that could really work in their favor a little bit, you know, for the first couple matchups of the season, because the film on them is going to be so different, because they're the players that have stepped up in camp are players that played last season, but you know, they didn't have, they weren't as solid as they are now. So I think there's been a lot of growth with this Illinois State team that maybe some other teams won't be anticipating.
Mm-hmm. And Zeke Vandenberg, he's become the leader, captain of the defense and everything. Charles Woods, he's been getting a lot more recognition, I would say, too. Coach was saying in the interview, and he was talking about the defense and how they're young, but they're going to be able to step up. They've had people step up, like I was saying, Charles Woods, and then Peyton Jones, another like nickel corner, nickel safety about. So it's going to be interesting to see how they play there. And they're going to be young. It's going to be their mental makeup of this game, or just of this season. It's going to be weird playing in the spring.
Definitely.
And thinking about playing in the fall, they didn't know really until August.
And so now, as the schedule stands, their game against Missouri State is postponed until April 17th, which will be at the end of the season. But looking at the schedule, it's going to get a little tough because they start with South Dakota, who's a good team at home. So at least you get that home game.
Mm-hmm.
But then that's a tough three-game stretch to start the season, where then you got to go to Northern Iowa and North Dakota State. Like, these are going to be three tough tests first 3 weeks of the season.
As a good old Iowa boy, I can tell you that good old Iowa boys know how to do football. So that is a tough test. And then NDSU, of course.
They're okay.
They're pretty good.
They're all right. They're, you know, they've only absolutely destroyed all of FCS football for the past 5 years.
But our last game we played, though, wasn't it against them and we lost 10-6?
It was like 9-3 or something.
Yeah.
Some really weird.
Both teams had single digits.
Yeah, because that was a couple weeks after James Robinson ran for 200 yards and single-handedly won the game for the Birds. But it's going to be a fun football season. April 10th is going to be homecoming against North Dakota, so the players are still going to get their homecoming, even though it's in the spring. They've got Southern Illinois, and if this team did bring back a lot of key pieces, like I know we lost Brady Davis and James Robinson, but there's still enough talent here for the Redbirds to be as dominant. And if Brock's back has proven one thing, it's he can recruit very talented players.
One thing about recruiting, you were saying, I just have a question. Like, what about James Robinson and his success in the NFL? How do you think that's going to affect recruiting here at ISU? Do you think it's going to bring in more recruits?
I think it's definitely going to help recruiting, because you got James Robinson, you got James O'Shaughnessy, you got Devontae Harris playing in the NFL. You've had players that have been able to establish themselves in the NFL and kind of make that name for Illinois State, where it's becoming a commonly known school at the FCS level. So that you could use that as a way to sell your school.
And I feel like until James Robinson, at least in our lifetimes, there's never been a player from Illinois State to go on and make as much of a name for himself.
Oh, yeah.
James Robinson had one of the most successful seasons by an undrafted rookie ever.
I think it was.
After we were talking about how he was going to get drafted in the fourth to fifth round, and teams just looked over him, and he fell into a great situation. But if you're a high school kid as a senior and you've got a bunch of offers, but then you look at the success that James Robinson has had, what prepared him to have that success and that mentality in the NFL, you're like, maybe Brock's back in the ISU coaching, or the ISU coaching at Illinois State Football. They really have something good going on there. Yeah. They've got a good culture.
And they're winning, too, at this level. It's almost like if you were like a tweener prospect where you're picking between maybe a group of five school where you're just going to lose every game in college, might not even have a chance getting drafted, or you could play at the FCS level and play for a team like Illinois State. Like, that almost seems like a no-brainer decision. Like, play a quote level down, but play for a much more established program.
Mm-hmm. And despite being young, I think this team can still make a run in the playoffs. And Coach Speck said he thinks this team can also make a run. It's a younger team, but it's a different younger team than Coach Specs had before, definitely, especially due to this season, COVID, and not playing for 14 months almost, too, as well.
And I cannot tell you how excited I am to just have the football team back at Hancock Stadium. Also, Leo, before we send it to break, if you're trying to follow the Redbird game right now, it's currently 13-5. Illinois State's whooping them.
Do we got Jake Fogle's Twitter account?
At JFogle5. That is Fogle. F-O-G-A-L. It is not E-L. F-O-G-A-L. At J Fogle 5. You can follow along with the game. He's there reporting for the Vedette. So keep that in mind if you want to follow live tweets from the game.
And tell him we sent you, too. Tell him the Red Zone crew sent you. We're going to take a quick break, but when we come back, we're going to have an interview with Illinois State volleyball phenom Sarah Kushner. You're listening to Red Zone on 103.3 WZND, the pulse of Red Bird Nation.
This is Steph Jankowicz from Redbird Volleyball, and you're listening to The Red Zone on 103.3 WZND.
Welcome back to The Red Zone. We're here with Redbird Volleyball Missouri Valley Conference Player of the Week, Sarah Kushner. The Redbirds are coming off a weekend sweep over Drake. So, Sarah, we'll just start with you've been a key part of this team since you arrived on campus. How did you feel playing so much as a freshman, and do you feel like you've moved into more of a veteran role now?
I definitely feel like I wouldn't say veteran, but I feel a lot more experienced and comfortable with our system and just kind of how like we play as a team, because when I came in, it was a lot of like learning, and so I was really focused on that. But now that I've like learned our offense and defense and kind of just gotten comfortable like with everyone and being at college and playing in college in general, I feel like I've been able to like be more nitpicky with what I want to work on, which has helped me like elevate my game in like small ways, but has helped our team, I think, like in big ways.
And you mentioned being able to play as a team. Have you felt that you've had to step up at all with some of the key players on the team being out for extended stretches this season?
I definitely think that being someone who's always on the court and kind of like being a consistent player, that I've had to be really steady and sometimes like step up in bigger ways. I think that anyone who's on the court or who has started, or with all the lineup changes we had, I think everyone's done a really good job of getting into their role. And I mean, we go hard in practice and like everyone has a starter mentality, so it's not like nobody's ready. But I think that since I'm playing all the way around and I'm like always involved, I have to be someone who's consistent, because that would just add to the chaos of like having a new lineup. And I think I've done a pretty good job of just being like a steady player so far.
And then for this season, it's been a little different playing back-to-back games sometimes. So can I just get your thoughts on like the new scheduling format this season?
It's definitely a lot different. It really throws off my whole week, because I always think that like Monday is actually a Wednesday, because like we play on Monday and then we have our off day and we like start our new week on Wednesday. So it's so weird. It's definitely an adjustment, because for example, if you like play a team on Sunday and beat them, you have to turn around and beat them again, which is really hard. And we've seen a lot of splits like throughout the conference where the team who loses comes right back again and wins. And I feel like it's hard to sort of make adjustments when you're winning back to back, but that's just something that we have to like elevate our game and do. Like, that's how we're going to win. So I feel like I was really happy with how we played this weekend, both days. I think we got progressively better. So we just need to keep feeding off that momentum and like elevating our game each day. And it definitely helps that we're home for two weekends, just sort of building that momentum, like with Redbird not having to worry about traveling. So, but it's definitely an adjustment, but I think like as time goes on, it'll get better and better.
And you guys seemed a little cursed by what you were talking about when you would split the series, because coming into this Drake series, you would split everything you'd played so far. Mm-hmm. And so was it sort of a sense of relief to sweep Drake and kind of be able to enter your stride here as we get into the middle part of the season?
Yeah, it was definitely a really good feeling winning both games, because I didn't realize, but we have a split with every single team. And I feel like we've been so close to like winning both games, but we were never just able to like get over the hump of like actually doing it. So now that we have, and we know what it takes and like what it feels like, I'm like really excited for the rest of the season, because we know that we can do it. So we just like have to keep doing it. And I think that everyone like really enjoyed that feeling after, of not being like, oh shoot, like, you know, like we were so close, we did it, but then we just made a couple of errors here and there. But I think that like as a team collectively, we've really are starting to like get into our groove.
And another thing, what's so different about this year is playing with masks too. So have you like noticed a big difference with that, or have you got kind of gotten used to it?
I'm not a huge fan of wearing them. I mean, obviously I'm super grateful that we're able to play, so I'll do whatever it takes to play, but it's definitely been a big adjustment for me. I don't know why it's just so hard for me to like breathe in it when I'm playing, but you get used to it. Like when I'm playing, I honestly like forget that I'm wearing one. It just, takes me a little bit longer to catch my breath during the long Valley rallies, but it's fine. I mean, I'm just really happy that we're taking the proper precautions we need to, so that we're able to play all these games.
And statistically, you're one of the best servers in the conference. What's like something you think about when you're at the line getting ready to serve to get you on the zone? Like, how do you, what makes you such a great server, I guess?
Well, definitely working on it in practice, like every single day we focus on serving. And I think what helps me is how specific we think about something. So like I'll think about serving a specific shoulder at a specific location, and I feel like that's easier for me to like pinpoint an exact spot, because I'm really able to like channel into that. And I also feel like I'm one of like the slower servers. Like I really take my time when I'm back there. I take a deep breath and like really calm down, because it's really easy to like get back there and like you're in the flow and you're frazzled, then you just like serve it in that or serve it out. So I feel like I really take my time and like try and focus in on my like specific location, and then working on what we do in practice to get a good clean hand contact. And then I don't really know, I feel like my serve's not even that good, but I get a couple aces here and there, so it's pretty nice.
And so since Coach Johnson has gotten here to ISU, the whole volleyball program has seen such big strides and a lot of success. And what attributes, being as somebody who's on the inside, what do you see that's different with Coach Johnson? Why her teams have this much success?
Well, I had never met the old coach, so I don't really like know specifically too much about her. But ever since I've like met Coach, she's just been such a driven and competitive person. And I think our team really feeds off of her competitiveness, and we want to be as successful as she sees us being. And another thing I think that really like she does a great job at is looking at the whole picture. So not just being good volleyball players, but being good people, being good leaders in our communities, being resilient, training our minds and not just our bodies. So like she's really good at looking at volleyball and us as a whole picture and not just athletes, because it takes more than skill at this level to like be successful. So I think she just does a great job of bringing us all together and preparing us in ways that like I've never done before, but it's really helping me out.
So you said it takes like more than skill. And so coming in your freshman year, who was someone when you first arrived that like took you under their wing and tried to show you the ropes here at ISU?
I feel like, I mean, I got pretty close with all of the seniors, but I think the person who took me under their wing most was Steph. She was the captain, and we ended up like being lifting partners for weights. So that was like how we started becoming close. And ever since then, I feel like she's kind of just shown me the ropes of everything and like taught me all the little things that separate Redbird volleyball from any other program, and just made me feel comfortable and like that it made me feel like I like belonged, and I was like really excited, and I was like, oh my God, like Steph likes me. Like, I'm so excited. I don't know. She just made me feel super comfortable and, showed me around, and it took me a while, honestly, to like figure out what was going on half the time. But I feel like now I'm like really, I'm there, and, so I'm really thankful that she did that, because I don't think I'd be where I am today without her having done that like all last summer and last year.
Is it kind of a weird adjustment for you now that you are a prominent force on the team and you have a year under your belt already? You have these freshmen on the team now who kind of see you in that same way.
It's so weird. Like, I can't even put it into words. And because like, I don't really see like anyone is being like better than anyone else. Like, we're all teammates, we're all the same. So when people are like looking up to me or asking me stuff, I'm like, oh my gosh, that's crazy, because like no one's ever done that to me before. Like, I'm the type of person to do that to other people. It's like really nice. It's pretty humbling, honestly, and it keeps me in check of like making sure that I'm doing the little things right, because people are looking up to me, so I have to set like the standard that was set for me when I came in.
And looking ahead to this weekend, this upcoming series against Valparaiso, what is the team focusing on to try to get the win this weekend?
Well, like I said before, I feel like we're getting into the groove of knowing what it takes to be the team that can sweep. And we're just coming into practice hungry and ready to work. We know that Valpo's a great team, and they've taken sets from everyone that they've played, and like they're ready to battle. So we have to come in with the same competitive mindset that we do each and every week, and just look for their strengths and try and figure out ways to problem solve and lean into our strengths and really hone in on those. And I don't know, just go out there like fearless, nothing to lose, because anything could happen at any time. Like, there's not one team that's really pulling ahead above everyone else. Like I said, like everyone's splitting. So I think we just have to come in ready to work and ready to play. And I think we are.
And you guys might not have even thought this far ahead, but is there a certain level of excitement that comes along with getting to play the conference tournament in your home arena and play in front of, you know, maybe not home fans necessarily, but at least your family and friends, and have the atmosphere that you're used to?
In that trip.
Yeah, I'm literally so excited. I like forgot that, because I mean, I've only gone one time, and like obviously we traveled, but having it here, it's going to be so nice. First off, that we don't have to travel, but second off, just like playing at home is just so much better, because like you said, like family will be able to come, hopefully maybe some other people, but really just like playing in Redbird is my favorite thing ever. And not having to like adjust to a new gym or like anything like that. I don't know. I'm just really excited. And I think that there's the magic in Redbird would definitely help us during the tournament, because, you know, we are the Redbirds. So I'm really, really excited. We don't talk about it too much, but I think about it a lot, how excited I am actually.
And I'm sure as you get closer to the tournament, it'll start like getting really excited or exciting, just because, you know, I can only imagine that it would be so nice to not have to travel and get to sleep in your own bed.
Yeah.
That must be some sort of competitive edge.
Yeah, honestly, it's going to be really nice. I don't want to like think about it too much because there's still so much that we have to accomplish before then. But in the back of my mind, it's simmering in the back, and I'm excited. I'm really happy about that.
So, Sarah, I don't know if you know this, but we are crosstown rivals. I went the NCHS, I went the Central, and you went the North. So I just got to ask you. Yeah. And my roommate, he went the North. He's a year older, Marcel Francis. So I got to ask, what's your favorite memory against playing us in high school?
Oh my gosh, I can't believe that. probably.
Or high school memory.
Probably being pretty dominant in volleyball. I can't remember losing.
Yeah.
So you guys were good. I don't know.
We probably did lose,
but I did feel like we were a lot better than Central, and it's always nice beating Central because I hate Central. So.
Right here.
I can't believe that. Oh my god.
Oh my goodness, he brought out the shirt.
I actually had to like change my mentality of stopping hating red when I was coming here.
Oh my god.
Because
I'm sure you
the
did.
Same colors. So, but now I love red, but not Central red.
Not Central red. Just red bird red.
Yes, exactly.
Thanks, Sarah Kushner, for being our guest this week. We are huge fans of the color red, whether it be for Naperville Central or Illinois State University. Gotta love Joe giving it to his crosstown rival, though, on his college radio show. Absolutely love that. And the volleyball team will be in action this Sunday and Monday at 4 o'clock against Valparaiso. You can catch that here on 103.3 WZND. We're going to take a quick break. When we come back, we're going to have news and sports guest Cameron Kelly on with a very special topic. Don't go anywhere. You're listening to the Red Zone on 103.3 WZND, the pulse of Redbird Nation.
Hey, this is Dickie V, baby, and you're listening to the Red Zone, baby, only on 103.3 WZMD.
We're back on the Red Zone. Leo Stoddher with Joey Dwyer and Joe Kennedy. And now we're joined by our news and sports guest, Cammy Kelly. Cammy, you brought a very special topic to us. You want to tell us a little bit about what we're talking about tonight?
Hey, y'all. Hey. Yes, of course. We're talking about, should women get more media coverage in sports? And I feel like this is near and dear to my heart because I played sports growing up. I played volleyball. I played a little basketball. Wasn't the best. Did not have the best hand-eye coordination. But that's what we're going to be talking about tonight.
And that's awesome. And this is definitely a topic that I think has gained a lot of traction, especially in like the past 6 months, I think, once sports came back, definitely. Mm-hmm. So want to tell us about some of your experience as being a woman sports fan, as seeing how female sports were covered by the media as opposed to maybe some male sports.
Yeah, of course. So growing up, my mom, my sister, and my dad and I would go to the Chicago Sky, if you guys are familiar with them.
Absolutely.
We would go to their games. I'd be courtside. I would get my basketball signed with them. I'd get, you know, like the handshakes from them, all that fun stuff. And I just remember going home with like posters of them and like, you know, stickers, all that stuff. And I would see their faces and be like, man, like I want to do this. So I feel like it gave me a lot of confidence as a young woman that was pursuing sports to be like, man, I want to do this more because I see media coverage of it. And I think growing up, I saw a lot of male coverage more so than women coverage, but that was like my distinct memory of seeing like women like everywhere, like in sports, because nowadays, like you really don't see that as much. Mm-hmm. So yeah, that was like my first memory ever, like thinking of like seeing women covered in the media.
And so about athletes, like what athletes do you think have brought the most awareness about gender equality in sports?
Oh, I can go on for days, Joe.
I know you brought up a couple of Simone Biles.
Yeah.
And obviously Serena Williams are two of probably the biggest here in America, but there's thousands of others too. So who else do you think?
So personally, I played volleyball growing up. I was outside, and I really loved Misty May and Kerry Walsh Jennings. Like when I say that they like really dominated volleyball, like beach volleyball, like man, like I looked up to them so much, and I wanted to just like take everything that they did and like put it into my own like work when I played volleyball, but they are like some big inspirations for me in volleyball.
And you mentioned the WNBA and how that was very formative going and watching the Chicago Sky games.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, that dug at me a little bit. I'm a big Indiana Fever guy.
Hey. But
why them, Joey?
Because I'm a Pacers fan.
Okay.
So it just makes sense to have all my basketball in one place.
Yep.
But we were talking about the volleyball players that you really loved growing up.
Mm-hmm.
And I always feel like the Olympics is sort of this outlier where you do have more coverage of women in sports than in the WNBA or the NWSL or the WHL.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Where you have sports that are the equivalent of men's leagues, but because they are seen like that, they don't get as much coverage. Do you see anything that's on the road to changing that in the past 5 years or so?
Wow, Joey, that was real deep.
Sorry to bring it deep on the show.
That's good. Like, I thought about that too. I think of like women and like even like Simone Biles. Like, she's covered really, really well because she's representing the USA, you know. But it's like day to day, we don't really see that much about volleyball or basketball. But I do think that it is on the road to changing, just because I think women are speaking up. And like Simone Biles in particular, she spoke up about this picture mm-hmm. that was actually posted by ESPN, and they basically had all the athletes that they call the GOATs. And that included like Brady, Jordan, a couple other people I can't even think right now, but it included a lot of other people. But she spoke up about it, and it got, you know, like people attracted to that, and people are thinking about like, wow, like women are like not being seen or covered as much in the media. And I think it starts with the athletes themselves, like Simone Biles, like her saying something like that. I think that brings a lot of attention to like the media, wondering like, like she's probably right that women don't get that much coverage. But I think they are on a road to improving and doing more. I don't know how much or how quick that's going to happen, but I definitely think that like speaking up and speaking out really grabs attention of the media.
And I think one of the big arguments that people bring up a lot is that, well, the major four sports in the U.S., like, they get all the recognition, and like, if you look at Simone Biles or Serena Williams, like, they play individual sports, but when you look at who is the greatest athlete of all time and why this picture that SportsCenter posted mm-hmm. irked so many people was because Serena Williams is the most decorated tennis player of all time and Simone Biles is the most decorated gymnast of all time.
Yeah.
And to keep them off the list of the greatest of all time when they are definitively the greatest of all time.
There are moves that are outlawed in gymnastics that only Simone Biles can do because they are outlawed because they are so dangerous for other people to attempt. She can literally do moves that no other human can accomplish.
That's like, so crazy.
That speaks about dominance.
And
I think Joey touched on a little bit about the Olympics, is that, you know, that happens every 4 years. It's this grand spectacle of worldwide competition, and I think it brings attention to female and male sports. But then there's, so every 4 years we gather and we watch, but then there isn't much follow through. And that's what so I'm a big hockey fan, and mm-hmm. I think the women's hockey game is more of what the modern hockey game should look like in terms of men's than the men's game, because it's fast. You have four lines that can score. There's just so much skill. There's more emphasis on skill rather than physicality. And I love watching it. But then you can really only watch it on national television during the Olympics. There's the fledgling NWHL is starting, but they didn't have a TV contract. You could literally watch their games on Twitch. Like, that was the only way they could get out on it.
Mm-hmm.
So I think somewhere, you know, one of these major networks, they can be the thing that starts a change by picking up either one of the professional sports leagues, so that women's sports aren't only at the forefront every 4 years, that make it, you know, all year round that we can mm-hmm. see these sports, because some of them are just so awesome. Like I said, the women's hockey game is just so exciting to watch just because it's mm-hmm. so fast and so skill-based.
And a lot of Chicago women, too, on that team as well.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Definitely. And Kendall Coyne was on that team, and she became the first woman to compete in the NHL skills competition in 2019, which was, I think, a huge step in gaining attention for women's hockey.
And she's become a broadcaster, too, and more women are becoming broadcasters, too, as well, year in and year out. But another thing is that the women's soccer across, even not even just in America, but across the whole entire world, The last World Cup for women's soccer was the most watched ever in the U.S. with over 25 million viewers, but yet the players are paid just a complete opposite amount. And U.S. soccer for the men's is not nearly as good competitive-wise against other teams across the world compared to the women, because they're not getting goals in. They're not winning World Cups back-to-back and winning other things as well. And it's just crazy for me to see that, because the women deserve it, and they deserve every right to get paid as much as the men.
Amen.
And Leo brought up something, and Cammie, I want to get your opinion on it, but mm-hmm. Leo brought up the TV contracts, and when you talk to a lot of people about women's sports leagues outside of the Olympics, like the WNBA, for example, people always bring up the money aspect and those salaries, and people are like, well, if the league made more money, the players could be made more money, or making more money, but to me, and I want to know how you see it, but to me, it all seems like it starts with the marketing and the TV, because the WNBA isn't afforded the same money-making opportunities that the NBA is.
I agree, Joey, 100%. I definitely think it does start with, like, the media, and, like, when athletes, like women athletes, are seen, then they get sponsorships with different people, and they're able to be on, like, cereal boxes and all that jazz. But it does start, like, literally... Yeah, it starts with that, with the media coverage and how they're being covered. And, yeah, it all plays a part with the money, too. Like, even thinking about this, like, here at ISU, like, you can go to a volleyball game for free, right? But then, like, for the guys' games, like, basketball or whatever, you pay $5. And, like, the media coverage is mainly strictly with men. I mean, women do get covered, but it is strictly men. And then people are paying to get into the games. So it's like, yeah, there's a lot of things technically with, like, money that we can, like, go into. Like, definitely.
And it does seem like there's some cognitive dissonance. If you even look at a micro level where you just look at ISU, like right now, how our women's basketball team is significantly better than our men.
Oh, yeah.
But and it's way more coverage.
It feels like that's what should be pulling more attention from media here, but it feels like the men still draw a lot more. And it's kind of this weird paradox where it's not all quite based on your merit, because, like, if it were, the women would be getting all the coverage because they're the ones actually winning games.
Mm-hmm. And I think the sad thing, unfortunately, is that men, you know, started this contract or whatnot, and I think that they can be the ones to break this. If male journalists start covering more women's basketball, more women's volleyball, more women's just sports, I think, like, if men start doing that, because I think women are interested, but if you have a male doing it, I think it really just starts, like, just a flame of people doing it because they see other men doing it. So I think men can really help stop this, or like start giving more coverage, if you know what I mean.
And I think it's also very important to have those women representing in journalism as well, not just on the court or on the field, but also in the booth, calling the game or writing up the presser afterwards. And that's something that I know it sounds a little hypocritical with three guys running this show, but it is a great thing to see more representation of women in sports media as well as sports, because I think if that's the way that we're moving, I think women who are in sports will have a much better future than they do right now.
And at the ISU level, we just saw Katie Broadway, a former ISU basketball standout, just made her broadcasting debut with ESPN Plus last weekend, and now could be like that model of a female journalist in the media for Illinois State University, and can hopefully won't be the last, you know, former Redbird athlete to come back and be that pillar now as a broadcasting standpoint.
Yeah, and it's finally starting to change, too, because I feel like even 5 years ago, that women that were doing broadcasts were mostly just on the sidelines and not even reporting on, like, after the games and everything. But now you're seeing them in the booth and you're seeing them in the press boxes just reporting mostly on the game, not just getting on sound bites on the field just because the production company or the company that they work for thinks that they're quote-unquote pretty or whatever. It's not all about the looks anymore. I think that's also a big important thing going on in women in the media and women in sports, is that they're being used just for their looks. But I think it's also starting to change a bit here, and especially in the sports.
And women who do that, they go crazy. Like, they do their thing out on courtside and all that stuff. I feel like it's just a very, like, I guess you just really have to learn your sport, learn your craft, and once you do, like, you can go such a long way with it.
Exactly. And that is not limited to what gender you are. It is simply what you know and mm-hmm. what you can learn and how well you perform on air. And so that has no inherent benefit for men. And so to not have an equal number of women doing the same thing is ridiculous. And so, but it seems as though we're on a good trend as far as women in sports, both on the field and off.
And it definitely does feel like this. And Cammy, we thank you so much for coming on. I think I definitely learned a lot from this conversation, and it's conversations like this that could start leading to change, hopefully.
Agreed.
And so this was just a very fun segment, and we're going to take a quick break, but when we come back, we're going to have our 3-up, 3-down pick'em segment. You're listening to The Red Zone on 103.3 WZND, the pulse of Redbird Nation.
Going up, coming down.
It's the 3-up, 3-down.
3-up. 3-down.
Only on the pulse of Redbird Nation. 1033 WZND.
Leo Stauder, Joey Dwyer, and Joe Kenny here. We're back for the 3-up, 3-down. Cammy Kelly is joining us. Joey, why don't you refresh our audience on what the 3-up, 3-down is?
Leo, I'm so glad you asked. What the 3-up, 3-down is, is
every week,
we're going to pick 6 NCAA college basketball games. We're going to have 3 that are favorites. One of them can be over 80%. Then we're going to pick 3 underdogs. And then one game has to be a Missouri Valley Conference basketball game.
And not a lot of games this week in the Valley.
And Leo, do you have the standings?
I think Joe has the standings, actually.
I also have the standings. So if Joe, you don't have the standings.
Okay, somebody read the standings. Joe, running out of time. Let's go.
Right, Joe, in first place, me and Steve are tied at 13-5. Then second, Joey is 12-5 because he had a COVID makeup game. And then Leo is 10-7.
I had a COVID game.
Guess this is just 8-10. It would not matter if Leo did or didn't have a COVID game because he is in fourth. But yeah, that's how the standings are looking right now.
And so
hopefully, Cammy, you can get up that guess. Maybe pass Leo here.
Yeah, Cammy, because the guest has not put you in a spot to succeed right now.
You know what? You know I don't know what I'm doing.
You're in your bag, though. You're ready. You're ready for this.
Okay. You know what? Cammy, you could not be worse than Leo's first time when he went 0-6. Did not get a single game right. So you cannot do worse than that.
No, like,
period.
Statistically, you
Leo,
cannot
I got
worse.
You.
So I set the bar pretty low for you. Don't worry.
Thank you.
And I'll start it here. Hopefully not send the bar too low with my first game. I got Ohio State versus Penn State. Ohio State comes in as a 69.2% favorite, and I'm going to go with the Buckeyes here as my first favorite.
I like the pick, Leo. My first pick, I'm going to pick Stanford. They're going to Washington tonight. They're favored by 77.4%, and I think the Cardinal with no plural. The Cardinal from Stanford will win this game.
All right, so you're going with the Trees. I'm going to have to go with the Buckeyes, too, as well with Leo. I'm going to be taking Ohio State over Penn State in the same game. Yeah, I just think Ohio State's just too good.
In my high, right, guys?
Yo, yeah.
Okay, so I have the St. Louis Billikens versus Dayton, 66.9%. Period.
You know what? I don't know a whole lot about the Billikens basketball team, but I do have a cousin who goes there. So,
so you got the inside track.
So yeah. I have the scoop, and my scoop says that's a good pick.
Ooh.
Did you pick St. Louis, Cammy?
Yes, I did.
Okay.
Mm-hmm.
And for Steve's first game, he's going to pick Oregon over Colorado. Colorado's a 54.4% favorite, so he's picking the Ducks as an underdog.
Ooh.
And moving into my second game, I got South Alabama versus Appalachian State.
Nice.
Appalachian State comes in as a 66.2% favorite. I'm going to go with USA, the underdog, here for my first down.
Leo. Okay, well, I'll go the first down with you if that's the direction you want to take. I'm going to go VMI, Virginia Military Institute.
Ooh.
Am I saying that right, Joe?
Yep.
Perfect. Against the Citadel. The Citadel has a 51% chance to win, but I'm going to go with VMI.
Ooh.
It's always fun to pick a school you've never heard of, so I'm going with the Military Institute on that one.
You got to go with the military, boys. You know they're always going to be getting it done. The Citadel, they're the Bulldogs. They're not going to get anything done.
They're also a military school.
That is true.
Well, they're the Bulldogs. I mean, I would rather go with the... They had a really cool name, VMI. I forget their mascot, but yeah, I'm going with them.
Awesome, and I'm going to go with Eastern Illinois versus the Murray State, and they have a chance of 8.7%.
Ooh.
Ooh. for Steve's next game. He's got Buffalo versus Toledo. Buffalo is a 51.4% favorite, but he's going to go with the Rockets here, another underdog.
All right, good for Steve.
In action.
And for my third game, we got Sacramento State playing Southern Utah. I know you boys are going to be watching this one. Southern Utah comes in as a 75.9% favorite, and I have to pick them there.
Of course you do. I'm going to go with my second up. I picked FSU, or I picked against FSU last week, and they did me dirty. They beat Virginia. So I'm picking them this week. They're going to Pittsburgh. But Carter gave us a little wisdom because he picked Wake Forest, who was at a 13%, and that game went to OT. And Pittsburgh's not very good. He says FSU plays down to their level. But I'm going to say they pull it out, 67.3%. Let's roll with the Seminoles.
All right, all right. I'm going to go with I'm a first over 80%. And I'm going to go with the weekly pick, the Gonzaga Bulldogs. I'm going to be taking them against San Diego. They're a 99.4% favorite. And I'm just waiting for them to lose because I know it's going to happen.
They're not going to lose. They haven't lost any conference in, what, like 2+ years? I think you're doing okay, Joe. You rigged the game.
And I'm going with Western Kentucky Hilltoppers versus the North Texas Mean Green. They have a 63% win.
Hey, don't sleep on the Mean Green, though.
Period.
They've got a lot of snow. It's pretty cold. They've had no power. They've had nothing to do but play basketball. So that's going to be a good game, too. The Hilltoppers, though, man. We got some great mascots today.
We do.
For Steve's next game, he's going with UConn versus Villanova. Nova's a 77.2% favorite, so he's going to ride with them. And for my next game, I'm going to go with Monmouth visiting Iona College in New York. Monmouth's a 52.8% college, but I'm picking Iona because you cannot pick against a Christian Brothers school in a basketball game.
Screaming.
How was Brother Rice in basketball?
Pretty good. One of the most historic teams in the city of Chicago, so pretty all right.
Yeah, all right, all right. For my second down pick, I'm going to go Mount St. Mary against Farley Dickinson.
Ooh.
And we're going with Mount St. Mary. They've got a 49.1% chance to win. And so I'm sticking with the religious themes that Leo's putting down today.
Can't say I can stick with that. But I will go with Nebraska against Purdue. And this one, Purdue is favorited by 76.2%. And you can't spell Nebraska, or you can't spell knowledge without Nebraska with an N. So that's how they do it there. So I'm going to be taking Purdue there at 76.2%.
That was tough.
When knowledge starts with a K. Okay.
No, exactly.
Jeez.
Oh, my gosh.
Nebraska.
And then, guys, I'm going with Jackson State versus Belmont. They have a 14.8% of winning.
Wow. So Cammy's down picks are very Carter-esque. Yeah, Carter is setting a precedent for the guest spot.
It just might work when
go big or go home.
Period.
Don't sleep on him.
For Steve's Valley game, he's got Valpo versus Southern Illinois. Southern Illinois comes in as a 53% favorite. He's picking Valpo here.
What day?
I don't have that written down, but I'll get that to you.
Because it's important in the Valley.
That is. That's important in the Valley. As for my next game, I'm going to the MAC. This pick comes courtesy of my friend Ben Rosen, so if this loses, that's his fault, not mine. Full of excuses here. We got Akron versus Ball State. Akron comes in as a 65.2% favorite, but I'm going to go with the Cardinals of Ball State here as
all
my
right.
dog.
My last dog is going to be the Valparaiso No Names because they did strip their former moniker.
Right.
They're visiting SIU, 46.2% chance. That game is on Sunday because it's very important to know the games and the days in the Valley. I'm picking Valpo.
All right, I'm going to be taking the same exact thing, Joey. I'm taking Valpo against Southern Illinois on Sunday.
Let's go.
Hope I'm doing this right. I got UNLV Rebels versus the San Jose Spartans, and I'm going with UNLV.
Great pick. I'll get to that one in a second.
For Steve's next game, he's got Baylor versus Iowa State. Baylor's a 98.8% favorite, so Steve's going to take that as his over 80 game.
And Cammy beat me to the punch on my over 80. I'm also going UNLV over San Jose State. I just have this image of the UNLV and how great they were in the early 90s.
Okay.
And so every time I get a chance to pick them, I'm always going to do it.
Yeah, can't go wrong with UNLV in Las Vegas. You gotta go with them. But my last pick here, I'm going to go in with what Steve picked as one of his underdogs. I'm going to be taking Oregon over Colorado tonight here at 10 o'clock. So a late tip-off on that one. I'll make sure to watch that.
sorry, guys. It's me. finally, I have St. Mary's versus Gonzaga, and I'm going with St. Mary's. They have a 3.1% chance
picking against Gonzaga.
I like it. Wow.
Joe Kennedy
you are
is trembling.
My routine.
Joe,
Kennedy
you're going down.
Trembling.
Oh, no. I'm in shambles right now, but I didn't pick that game, so
okay.
I'll root for St. Mary's tonight.
You both can have some success tonight.
Yeah.
And Steve's last game, he has UMass over St. Joe's. UMass is a 75.5% favorite. I also forgot to include my last game, my Valley game and my over 80 game. I got Drake over Evansville on Sunday. Drake's a 95% favorite. And that's going to wrap it up for our show tonight. We'd like to thank Sarah Kushner of Redbird Volleyball for coming on as a guest. She talked about the upcoming series this weekend against Valparaiso and much more. We'd like to thank Cameron Kelly for coming in to talk about gender representation in sports. That was a very powerful topic.
Of course. Thank you for having me.
Of course.
Anytime.
Awesome.
And it was just a loaded show. And to Joey's point earlier, how Brother Rice basketball is, let it be known that Derrick Rose, Dwayne Wade, and Antoine Walker's last high school games all came as a loss to the Brother Rice Crusaders. Had to get that in there. If you missed any point part of tonight's show, you can check it out online. Joe Kennedy's going to have it posted in podcast form. Thank you for listening to the Red Zone on 103.3 WZND, the pulse of Redbird Nation.
To hear this and other past episodes of The Red Zone again, download the Red Zone podcast online at WZND.com or on iTunes. And of course, tune into The Red Zone every Thursday at 6, right here on 103.3 WZND, the pulse of Redbird Nation.